Welcome to Authors of the Pacific Northwest, where we connect Pacific Northwest authors with new listeners and provide advice for aspiring authors on the business of writing. I'm your host, Vicki J. Carter. So hi there, listeners, and today I'm super excited to introduce to you William Cook.
Hello. Very interested in being here.
Awesome. Well, I'm so glad to have you. So first off, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, starting with what state you live in the Pacific Northwest. And I know you don't have a day job, but tell us what your day job was before you went into the authoring in retirement.
Okay. Currently, I'm living in Oregon, but I'm a transplant here. I'm not a native. I moved here from the Northeast back in 1989. Originally grew up in Connecticut. While here, I've worked at Kaiser Permanente in the mental health department. I was a mental health therapist there until my retirement at the end of 2011. And since then, I've been writing and babysitting my grandkids.
Oh, what a perfect job. That signed me up to that one. I love it. So I'm just curious, how many grandchildren do you have?
15.
Oh my goodness, you're kidding. Seriously, wow, that's awesome.
that's between my wife and me.
No, that's wonderful.
I have two sons and a daughter, and she has three daughters. And so between us, it's 15 grandchildren.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Well, my hope is someday my kids will know I'm saying this on podcast because they're not having kids yet. But someday that's what I want to do. I want to retire, write, and watch my grandkids. That's like the perfect plan. Awesome. So what else would you like readers listening to this for the first time to know about you right up front as an author?
As an author, I try to write thoughtful things. What I mean by that is I am a bit old-fashioned the way I write. My short stories have plots. They have beginnings, middles, and ends. I try my best to make my stories in a way, cinematic. I want the reader to be able to see what's happening, to be able to feel it and smell it and kind of be there in the action. Mm-hmm. So I spend time in trying to make that click with the visible.
Nice. Very good. And a hard job too.
But a fun job. Yes. It's the part of the writing that I really enjoy doing is to try to find just that turn of phrase that transports the reader to where that action is happening.
Oh, awesome. Well, I will be calling you when I need help with that because as you know, and I told you and all my listeners know, I'm an aspiring author. So I'm doing these podcasts to learn from everybody else because I'm learning. So tell us, tell our readers your titles of what you've published because I know there's more than one. So
yes. Okay. I currently have four books available on Amazon. The first book that I finished right after my retirement is a novel by the name of Songs for the Journey Home. I think of it as a spiritual quest kind of book. The elevator explanation is someone loses his faith as an adolescent and finds it again as an adult. The more expanded version is that on the first page, a gentleman is watching the news and sees a viral video of a bank robbery and recognizes that the hostage who was just killed was his best friend from 50 years ago. And so he goes on a quest to find out how did my friend wind up in that bank at that time. Oh. When he goes to work that day, he gets put on administrative leave because two of his patients claim that he sexually abused them in therapy.
Oh my goodness.
That's the setup for the book. And the book goes through some of the iconic events of the 60s. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King's March on Washington, the assassination of the two Kennedys, the Kent State shootings in 1970.
Wow.
One of those characters sort of follows his life fairly closely through those events.
Wow. So it's a little bit of a historical.
There's history in it. And it's a sort of an experimental style. It's got three parts. And in the first part and the third part, each chapter alternates between 1962 and 2012. So it bounces back and forth years for each chapter. And then the middle section, section number two, is it's a chronological piece.
Sounds right up my alley.
One.
Okay.
Book number two is called The Pietà in Ordinary Time and Other Stories. It's a book of short stories that I wrote. One of my favorites, because I think of it as a salad of short fiction. There's no one theme that connects them. Mm-hmm. Some of the stories are kind of humorous. Several are kind of thoughtful meditations on life and death and suicide. One of them is pretty creepy. Mm-hmm. So it's a smorgasbord.
Nice.
After that, I wrote Seal of Secrets. That's another novel. And my goal in writing that novel was to try to write a book that was the literary equivalent of a bag of potato chips. Just like someone says, well, I got to eat one more chip. Uh-huh. I was hoping they would say, well, I got to read one more chapter before I go to bed. One more chapter before I make supper.
Oh, I love it.
That was my goal. And then the newest book I just published last month is called Catch of the Day. Mm-hmm. And it's another book of short stories. And again, a smorgasbord, a mixture of things. I had the pleasure of having my wife paint the cover for it.
Oh, that's so awesome.
That was a kind of nice joint venture. So she did the cover.
Fantastic. So your wife is also retired and a painter. Is that what she's?
Yes, she's an artist.
Fantastic. Yes,
she hangs her works at the Yaquina Gallery in Nye Beach in Newport. Mm-hmm. In the Beachstone Gallery, the Artist Studio Association in Lincoln City.
Oh, good. So now our listeners will also have to go see your wife's artwork, because I am a big believer in, I love couples and partners that are artistic together. I think it's a great energy. I'm fortunate to have a very artistic partner, husband, and we feed off each other a lot, but he's also my best critic, and he's very fair and sometimes not super nice, but he gets what I need to hear, right?
Yes. Wife on more than one occasion has told me, you know, that doesn't work, or you got to take it in this direction, or try this instead.
Beautiful. Perfect partner in crime. Fantastic. So it sounds like to me, William, that you are, and now correct me if I'm wrong, you're self-publishing, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Because that's kind of where I'm leaning. You probably haven't heard the podcast, but I have come from, you know, music industry in the past with my husband. So I kind of know the ropes as far as managers, that kind of thing. And so I'm leaning towards for myself, self-publishing. So tell me particularly why you chose to go self-publishing. I find that fascinating.
Well, to be honest, I have a dear friend who has written a bunch of novels. And several years ago, he tried to get an agent and get published the traditional way. And he spent more than a year, sent out innumerable inquiries and query letters, could not pay somebody to read 10 pages of his material.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I don't know if I need that kind of stress.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had a friend that told me about self-publishing, and I thought, that's what I'm going to do. And so the paperback versions are through CreateSpace.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The Kindle version, of course, is on Amazon. And both versions are only for sale on Amazon. Although recently, there's a bookstore in West Salem here.
Oh, yeah.
That will carry my books. And a new bookstore is opening in Portland, still in the process of opening. And it's taken one of my titles up there.
So. Oh, that's fantastic. Maybe you can come up this way and do a book signing and I can come visit. That would be fantastic.
That would be fun.
So tell me, what was your biggest learning curve with self-publishing? Because as I'm looking at it, there's a lot of technology. We're going to talk about marketing here. There's cover designs. There's all this stuff that usually traditional publishing houses would do for authors or collaborate with authors. But for you, what was the biggest learning curve?
Well, marketing remains my biggest learning curve.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the thing I do most poorly. And I don't pay enough attention to it. I get so busy wanting to write.
Mm-hmm.
I don't spend the time I need to spend in marketing my material. That's the truth of it. I'm not very tech savvy. Mm-hmm. And so I have to frequently consult with my sons and sons-in-law.
Well, thank goodness you got them.
Absolutely. As I said in one of my emails to you, they're my default value for
celebration. Yeah.
Formatting was initially a bit of a trick, but I was able to find some books that sort of explained how do you do that, because the formatting for Kindle and formatting for CreateSpace are entirely different.
Yeah.
But that said, the process, the programs that Amazon and CreateSpace use are very user-friendly. Mm-hmm. So once you get started, it goes very quickly, and it's all very logical. And I say that because there are so many programs that I've bumped into that are supposed to be friendly, and they're not.
Yeah.
But CreateSpace and Kindle are really friendly.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, I hope that through my podcast, I'm gathering resources that other authors are using as well. And so maybe you can find one more new tool through, you know, staying in connection with us. And the marketing, even though I want to claim I'm a digital native because I'm young enough to be in that crowd, the whole marketing for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook has been beyond me almost. I have employed my younger daughters. They're not younger. They're in the digital children age. And they've told me I do some things that are pretty cheesy. So the marketing part of it is something that is, I feel like for me, and I don't know about you, so tell me what you think. It feels like the marketing sometimes gets in the way of the writing. The business of promoting yourself can just zap into writing. So how do you balance that? Do you, what's your trick for that?
I have not successfully balanced.
Okay, good. I'm not alone.
Honest with you. What has been most helpful to me, I should say, the resources that have been most helpful have been the groups that I've joined.
Okay, good.
Joining the Northwest Independent Writers Association has been most helpful. Now, that's an online group. Mm-hmm. I only meet them occasionally at conferences, book signing conferences. But the information that's been made available through them to me on their website has been really immeasurably helpful. I've also been a part of Willamette Writers. They have branches throughout.
Yes.
And they meet monthly, a physical meeting in the Salem Library. And that's been very helpful. I've also take part in a weekly meeting. It's called Writers Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, that meets every Thursday afternoon in our library. And then finally, I'm part of a critique group. It's a very small group, just four people. We meet once a month.
Mm-hmm.
We go over, we share material and really critique it.
Fantastic.
And so that's probably been the part that I've learned the most from those resources.
And see, that was one of my questions. So I was going to lead up to this question eventually was what has been your support groups? Because I found that typically for me, even though I sound like I'm an extrovert, I truly am an introvert. And I found that I absolutely had to put myself out to develop a support groups around me, found tons of great resources online. Great. And I'll make sure for our listeners that we put some of these resources that you mentioned online. So if they're in your area, they can find them too. Are there any other support groups or associations that you can recommend to someone like myself that's still starting out?
Those are the only ones that I know of right now.
Fantastic. Well, we'll make sure that listeners and myself will find them. And I did find you through the Independent Northwest Artists Authors Group.
That way. Okay, good.
Yeah, so that's how I found you. Okay, so let me ask you this question. What is your inspiration, or more importantly, what keeps you going as an author? Because it's a tough business.
Well, you know, I do it for the pleasure of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I especially like are what I call epiphanies. What I mean by that is I'm what they call a pantser. I write in the seat of my pants. I don't write an outline.
Yep.
So I have to write enough until I get critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, the characters begin to take on a life of their own and begin to talk back to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I'm working on a new novel right now. And for the longest time, weeks, I would write 200 words a day or 300 words a day. Nothing was really happening until finally I had enough of a couple of characters that one of them made a comment that I didn't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
That comment that that character made launched the book. I finally knew where the book was going, and I didn't know until that point. So when that happens, it's such a thrilling experience. Because as I said, the characters take on a life of their own.
Oh, they
do. I don't want to say that. I'm going to say that this is what I'm going to do. And I said, I didn't anticipate that you're going to do that.
Okay. So let's go back to your prior role in your professional life. Because all of us authors talk about these moments when we hear our characters in our head. And many people will think that's schizophrenic or crazy. And a couple of us authors on the podcast have talked about the schizophrenia that kind of happens. You know, you have to get them out. So how do you resolve, you know, is that resolved for you? Because it's the creative process. It truly is real. So did that freak you out at first, coming from your background clinically? Tell us we're all okay.
Yeah, it did not freak me out.
Okay, good.
Because, well, it's, you know, on the, it's like the reverse. It's exciting.
Yeah.
When it happens, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's a wow kind of feeling. It's not like, oh my goodness. It's a wow. Now, sometimes it can be a scary wow. One of the stories in the Pietà is a pretty freaky story. And the bad guy in there kind of freaked me out a bit.
Uh-huh.
That can happen.
It can.
But overall, it's a wondrous experience.
Awesome. Well, I love having you on here because it kind of validates me a little bit to know that it's okay and it doesn't scare you, because it truly is that experience for readers that maybe aren't writers yet. I believe all readers will eventually become a writer at some point, you know, because if you read enough, you'll be inspired. But I feel like readers, hopefully we've done our job well in our books, that they see what we're feeling and hearing in our heads. And it's, but for us, it's like, you almost can't do it fast enough once those characters come to you. They literally come to you. So it validates me that you find it as exciting, because then I'm like, okay, his background lets it be okay for me to have some crazy moments. Especially when I'm waking up in the middle of the night and I have to write something down because they.
Oh yeah, and that's key, is mm-hmm. that when the idea comes, you have to scribble it down somewhere. At least yeah. I do, because yeah. I have a brain like a sieve and I'll lose it. You know, I'll get an idea in the shower. I'll get an idea yeah. the moment I wake up, and I have to get it written down. I just don't want to forget it, because it's a little bit of a gem that I want to hang on to yeah. until such time as I can use it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I do the same thing. And I've had inspirations pop in at the craziest times that I'm like, sorry guys, got to go write something down. I'm not going to be worth any salt to you to have a conversation. Unless I go get this written down and I come back. It clears my mind. So let me follow up on one other question. You were talking that you're a pantser. So for those listeners that don't know this, a pantser or plotter are authors. You're either one or the other. Typically, a plotter is a planner. So they'll use outlines and schematics or plotting out the course of their characters, where a pantser will just right off the seat of their pants. So is there ever a time where you kind of cross over after those characters, you get that first part? Do you start planning at that point, or do you just keep going with the plot?
Well, it's a little of both, because sometimes something will reveal itself that is not going to happen in the story for maybe many thousands of words. Mm-hmm. And so I've got to write that somewhere and preserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it might be, in my first novel, there was a court scene at the very end. I was only near the middle of the book, but the court scene came to me, and I had to write that out because I knew I would lose it if I didn't write it out then.
Correct, yeah.
So that was, in a way, kind of planning forward.
Yeah.
But I kind of envy those authors that are able to put an outline together and really get it mm-hmm. all. They have such a direction. This is sort of a little scarier, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I tend to lean towards, I want to believe I'm a planner, plotter. I want to believe that because I love outlines. In my regular life, I have to plan everything out. But honestly, as I start writing, it seems that I tend to go off on all different directions, and it's not linear and it doesn't stay in an outline. I have to resolve that somehow so that I can actually produce something. So our final thoughts with you before we have you read one of your works, which I'm sure our listeners are ready to get to. They're done with all this author talk, right? What information would you like new listeners to know about you and your future work?
Well, my latest novel is actually going to be a sequel to an earlier novel. Mm-hmm. When I started writing Seal of Secrets, I had no intention of writing more than that one. That was just going to be standalone. I had several people afterwards tell me, you know, that novel ended kind of abruptly. We'd like to know a little bit more about what happened to those characters at the end. And so I wrote a short story that I included in my most recent book of short stories. And the short story is kind of standalone, but it really is a sequel to Seal of Secrets. It's called Eye of Newt, and it appears in my book, Catch of the Day. Mm-hmm. As I was rereading Eye of Newt, I realized, oh my goodness, I have to make this right. I've got to do something with this villain. He has to have a comeuppance. And so I've started my newest novel, which now is a sequel to Eye of Newt.
Oh, how fantastic.
Those are connected, and I had never intended that. I know people write trilogies all the time. They enjoy writing trilogies, and trilogies sell. You know, they're a really good hook when you write a trilogy. So it looks like I may be writing a series of Driftwood mysteries. I created this town, Driftwood, in Seal of Secrets, which sounds suspiciously like Lincoln City in many ways. I like the town. And so it looks like maybe much of my future writing is going to take place in Driftwood.
Oh, how exciting. Oh, and I hope our listeners and future readers will just love the series. I'm a big series fan. When I find an author I love, and if they write a series, I'm stuck with them for all the way through. I get upset when a character dies, you know, I get very emotional. So I'm planning, hopefully in my future, will be series writing as well. So awesome. Okay, so we're ready for your reading. So set the stage for our listeners. Tell us, you know, what you're reading from, and share with us briefly what you can about the character and the setting. So to set the stage.
I'm going to read one of these short stories that appears in my latest book, Catch of the Day. The short story is called Looking at the Sun. I wrote it really at the request of a friend. It's about the eclipse that occurred last August. We witnessed it on the deck of a friend's beach house in Lincoln City. And as we were leaving, the friend said, you know, you got to write a story about the eclipse. And I said, well, okay. So this is what I came up with. Looking at the Sun. Do you love me, Patrick? The question hung in the air for the briefest of moments, like a soap bubble from a child's wand. She heard it, that hiccup of silence. She tucked a lock of black hair behind her ear and tilted her head toward her husband. They'd been on different pages for a long time. Of course I do. It seemed to her more protest than affirmation. He took another sip of his morning coffee and grimaced. Hell, we had three more kids after our happy accident. She turned and looked out the glass slider toward the sea. Her voice was soft, wistful. Was that love or boredom, do you think? Jesus, Julie, sometimes I can't figure you out. Can't we just enjoy this? It's a goddamn total eclipse of the sun. We're never going to see this again in our lifetime. He put down his coffee cup and opened his arms wide. She knew he spoke with his hands when he got excited. Hell, they say the zone of totality is only 70 miles wide. On the surface of a globe, that's like a line drawn with a ballpoint pen. Do you realize what a privilege it is to be among the few who will be able to look directly at the sun without any kind of protection? Julie pursed her lips. Why don't we ever look at us? He sighed. Do you want another cup of coffee? I need a warm-up. No thanks. She looked toward the coffee table in the living room, where her photojournalism book, Hell Hath No Fury, lay untouched since last year. Her portrait of the suffering of the Cuban people after Hurricane Indira had swept the island won accolades for its courageous humanity. Buried amid the epic devastation were intimate family stories she had unearthed and shared with the world. Her efforts earned her the Pulitzer Prize and months of breathless nightmares. Had Patrick even read it? He was so absorbed in his own work, writing code for the Wunderkind Gaming Company, that he had time for little else. His creation, Chrysolite 3, had won Video Game of the Year, and he had just accepted an invitation to present at Comic-Con 2018 in San Diego. She watched as he frowned at the coffee pot and poured the dregs into his cup. He turned off the machine. "You know, it will actually get dark," he called over his shoulder. "Crickets will start chirping. Bats will be flying. Then in 2 minutes, it's daylight again." She opened the sliding door and walked out onto the deck. The cool air felt moist on her cheeks. "It's still pretty foggy. We may not see a thing." Patrick drew near and stroked her back. "Aren't you the optimist?" "Just saying. The marine layer hasn't shown its face for the last 3 days, and now it's back. It may not be your lucky day. Will you be disappointed?" "The weatherman says it'll clear up, and I believe him. We'll be fine." "But will you be disappointed if it doesn't and you don't see it?" "Forget it. I'll be in the house cooking myself a couple of eggs. Let me know if you want anything." He entered the kitchen and pulled the slider closed behind him. Julie listened to the rhythmic roll of the surf. There were almost no traffic sounds. She and her friends had been surprised that the tourist Armageddon, predicted by every news channel, had not overwhelmed the sleepy coastal town. She figured those news reports and the fickle weather had scared the tourists away. The dilemma now was that every store and restaurant was hopelessly overstocked with food and paraphernalia that would never be purchased. Merchants' losses could be catastrophic. All for what? A two-minute glimpse of the sun blacked out by the moon? Surely there were more important things. "I don't get it," she concluded. She inhaled deep breaths of salt-laden air, relishing the smell and the taste of it. She loved the ocean and the little beach house. She just wasn't sure she loved Patrick. She walked back inside. Patrick was at the stove cooking some scrambled eggs. Another pan held four strips of bacon that were filling the house with a classic fragrance of breakfast. Patrick must have recharged the coffee pot too, she thought. "It smells awfully good in here. Is there enough for me to have some?" "Sure, honey." "And when does the eclipse start?" He looked at his watch. "In about half an hour. It'll be total a little after 10. He finished his cooking and set two plates on the table. "More coffee?" "Please." They ate in silence. Julie was surprised at how loud the kitchen clock sounded. "Almost forgot to make the beach house mortgage payment last week. Remembered on the due date and did it over the phone so we didn't get stiffed with any penalties." She bit off a piece of savory bacon. "I told you to make it an automatic withdrawal. Then you wouldn't have to worry about it every month." "Yeah, you're right." When they were done, Julie cleared the dishes into the sink and poured herself another cup of coffee. She waved the pot at her husband, and he nodded back. With a deft twist of her wrist, she poured him another cup. "You're cut off now, mister, or you'll be bouncing off the walls." "Yes, mommy," he said as he took an exaggerated slurp from the mug in his hands. "We are good together, aren't we? Or is that just wishful thinking on my part?" She took a sip and burned the tip of her tongue. "At least the sex is still good. But is sex enough to sustain a relationship? And do I trust him?" "So, lover boy, how's Susie?" He looked surprised. "How would I know? She's in another office. I rarely see her." "I thought you said you had lunch with her last week." "Oh, yeah, I forgot. She's doing fine. Likes her new position." Her suspicion meter turned on, but she didn't have enough energy to pursue it. "I guess that's a diagnostic," she decided. She began to feel as though she had been filling out some kind of marital satisfaction inventory, and she didn't like it. "Where's the glasses anyway?" "Right here." He reached into their kitchen junk drawer and withdrew two pairs of eclipse glasses from a protective envelope. "Try them. You can stare right at the sun and not hurt yourself." "You sure?" "Guaranteed." He looked at his watch again. "Let's go back out on the deck. It'll be starting any time." He moved two chairs into position, and they sat side by side. Tattered clouds scudded across the sky, dimming the sun, but not blocking it out. Here we go. Look at that. See the notch forming at the edge? The excitement in his voice reminded her of their son, Danny, their boy naturalist. Anything to do with bugs or birds, snakes or stars was his bailiwick. He and his brothers had gone to their friend Carson's house, a few miles inland and farther from the marine layer. "We'll have a better chance to see it," he had claimed. Not to mention that Carson's parents always seemed to have a good supply of corn dogs and Oreos on hand. "You sound just like Danny. I saw two partial eclipses growing up, but never a total. It's like I've waited for this moment my whole life." "It's like the way I felt on our wedding day," she thought. "All of my life distilled into that single minute when he slid the ring on my finger and said the words that knit us together." She stood in the sanctuary of St. Matthew's, the church she had attended since her baptism as an infant. It was as familiar as visiting the house of an old friend. First confession at age 7, when sin was as foreign to her as the reckless lives of the movie stars she overheard her mother talking about with her coffee klatch. First Holy Communion a week later, decked out in the white dress and veil of an angel come to earth. Confirmation at 12, when she had just been introduced to the mysteries of being a woman. Now marriage at 21. These sacraments, these visible expressions of some invisible grace, were mileposts along her life's journey, anchors that kept her safe and gave her direction. Today, the candles burned as brightly as they had always had, while smells of paraffin and incense perfumed the air. Father Kelleher, longtime family friend, stood before them, his smile as warm as the August day outside. She felt herself falling into Patrick's azure eyes, afraid she might faint at any moment. "Till death do you part?" the priest asked. "Till death do we part," she affirmed. Those words stuck in her mind like a cookie crumb caught in her throat. She coughed. "What's the matter?" "Nothing, just remembering stuff."
"Like what?"
"Our wedding day, how handsome you were."
"Still am,"
she smiled, "still are." She held the glasses up to her eyes and saw the bite the moon had taken out of the sun. Shadow overcoming light, or tedium taking joy?
"It's begun." His elation was almost contagious. "What cosmic coincidences. The moon being just the right size, just the right distance from the earth and the sun. It fits perfectly."
He was so enrapt, he didn't see the single tear on her cheek, and she brushed it away with her finger. "We fit perfectly once, the right size and distance, when gravity didn't pull so hard. Can we ever get it back? Do we want to?" She sat without speaking, glasses shielding her eyes. The notch grew larger. Patrick started to laugh. "It's beginning to look like Pac-Man. Hey, I just remembered. Look at this." He ran back into the house and came out with a colander. Lifting it high above his head, he pointed to the deck floor. "See what it's doing? Each hole becomes a pinhole camera and projects the sun's image. Like gold doubloons with chunks taken out of them, little eclipses littered the deck." He put down the colander. "Come on with me. We got plenty of time before totality." Without waiting for his wife to respond, he grasped her hand and hurried her off the deck, downstairs and outside. "We'll take a quick walk down Sandollar Avenue. There's a lot of oak trees there." Hand in hand, they marched the two blocks to the tree-lined street. "This'll knock your socks off, honey." She gasped when they walked under the canopy of branches.
"How?"
"Just like with a colander. Little openings between the leaves make tiny pinhole cameras, hundreds of them." He swept his arm in a graceful arc, presenting her with a treasure trove of crescent suns at their feet, an extravagance of riches. Astonished, she held her breath as she surveyed the lights in the shadow. "How profligate nature is," she mused. "I guess his enthusiasm is beginning to affect me after all." She stopped thinking for a moment and kissed him on the cheek. "Now let's get back to the deck. It's getting close to the time.
I have to show you Bailey's beads."
"What's that?" "Right at the moment of totality, the sun is a thin little ring with what looks like tiny sparks along the edge. Believe it or not, those sparks are sunlight peeking through the valleys between the mountains on the moon. Then the corona erupts around the disk, and we get to look at the sun without glasses for almost 2.5 minutes. It's once in a lifetime, darling." "Once in a lifetime," she mused, "like our wedding day was supposed to be." Can I reignite that spark? Does he even know? As though he sensed something was not right, Patrick stopped and looked into her eyes. You're not very excited, are you? He took a deep breath. I know you haven't been very happy with me. His face darkened for a long time. We never really talk anymore. She spoke of the resignation born of tired, empty days and nights of troubled sleep. We've been talking all morning. His voice sounded petulant, a little boy defending himself. That's what I mean. Her lower lip quivered, but she held back her tears. What? I don't understand. We don't talk. You lecture me about the sun, or you give me a dissertation about North Korea, or how the Seahawks are doing this year. Do you remember why I was upset about my friend Corinne? I told you during the game last Sunday, and you never even looked up from the TV. Last night, I said I wanted to visit her in the hospital sometime today. And when I mentioned it this morning, you looked at me with that expression you get when you think you're hearing about something for the first time. She shook her head. We're like a jigsaw puzzle missing a piece, and I don't even know where to look for it. What do you want from me? He sounded desperate and frustrated. I'm not sure I know anymore. Acknowledgement? Recognition? Why do I feel like we're becoming strangers? We made love 2 nights ago. We had good sex 2 nights ago, she corrected. I'll give you that. She looked at the man boy she had married 15 years ago. She loved the feel and the smell of him, but needed something more. Patrick stepped forward and wrapped his arms around her. I don't know how to make us better, he whispered in her ear. I know. Let's go back so you can show me Bailey's beads. They walked back to the house hand in hand. Neither spoke. She felt a nervousness in his grasp, not the cocky self-confidence he usually flaunted. At least he's being honest, she thought. The last time she had felt that disquiet in his hand had been when he walked her down the aisle at church at the end of the ceremony. Husband and wife, outside on the church steps, the sun beat down on them, making her white gown dazzling. People began clapping and throwing confetti and rice, and she felt his body tremble. She knew he was scared. They had just pledged their lives to each other, and both grasped the enormity of their endeavor. Both already had friends who had been divorced. But that undefended vulnerability soon succumbed to congratulations and well-wishing, wedding cake, and alcohol. She tightened her grip on his hand and leaned into him. We'll make it work, she whispered, uncertain from where that affirmation had come. We'll just have to be patient with each other. At the house, they hurried back out onto the deck and put on their glasses. It's almost time, Patrick said, as the sun began to wink out. There, it's total. He pointed to the heavens, those little flashes of light on the edge of the ring. From the mountains of the moon to you, darling. The sun was gone, and a different light, like the shimmering petals of a flower, grew around the black disk. That's the corona. It means crown. It's an aura of plasma way hotter than the surface of the sun. My gosh, it's cold. Did you feel the temperature drop? At least 10 degrees, maybe more. And look, there's bats, lots of them. Crickets had begun chirping in the underbrush, and streetlights turned on in the deep twilight. Julie found it hard to take her attention away from the dark disk hovering in the sky. She wasn't prepared for how overwhelmed she felt, sitting there staring at the sun. A cleansing emotion welled up from deep within her as tears poured from her eyes. It's so beautiful, she breathed. I didn't know. Patrick kissed her. I've saved the best for last. Just keep watching. As the seconds ticked by, Julie was transported. Her heart pounded and her breath quickened. She felt as though she weren't a part of her body any longer, as though she were lifted high above it, separate but whole. Here it comes. Totality is ending. The edge of the sun burst from behind the moon. They got a quick glance and turned away from the brilliance. They call it the diamond ring. He grasped her hand, raised it to his lips, and kissed it tenderly. With this ring, he said, his voice cracking and his hand trembling, I thee wed and promise to thee my faithfulness. Julie wept.
Bravo. Absolutely moving. So, oh, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that with me and with our readers. It's beautiful. Listeners, readers, find William Cook. Go get his books. They're fantastic. And thank you for being here on the podcast with us today.
It has been my pleasure, Vicki. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hoped you loved hearing from the author as much as we did. If you did enjoy the author, make sure you find them on social media. Buy their book and write a review. Are you a published author and would like to be featured on the podcast? Visit us at our website to learn more. You can help support the production of this podcast by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Share the podcast with your friends. And most importantly, become a supporter. Supporters receive monthly bonus podcasts and a newsletter filled with tips from our authors. To find out more how to become a supporter, visit our website. And finally, I hope you always remember to enjoy the journey. Until next week, this is Vicki J. Carter saying goodbye.